There's no place to throw them out to. All of us are here. We all interact with each other and we must work with each other. And the ones that are particularly difficult to work with are helped by the spirits that have the greatest amount of patience and knowledge. D. Of course this is always benefiting that person's karma too, to be able to work with someone like that. S. Oh, yes, these are usually spirits that are close to or have reached their ultimate. D. They would have infinite patience. So there's no way they would just say, oh, forget about it. There's no hope for him. S. No. They keep working with them. Sometimes after a few incarnations some so-called human feelings start to work their way into their hearts, in spite of themselves. And they start to realize that there are higher planes of life and existence. That's when they finally start working on actively doing something about changing their karma. To give an example of how damaged these souls are that come to the hospital, in your plane there was one called Adolf Hitler. He was not sent to the hospital because his soul was not that damaged. He was sent to the learning portion of the plane, the retreat. He needed a quiet time of reflection because he had become well, another metaphor, his nerves had become jangled. The problem in that lifetime was that he was an extremely creative person. He would have been a creative genius, but he had no outlets for it because the depression culture he was raised in did not allow for creative outlets. There was an inordinate amount of energy behind this creativeness, as there always is in these geniuses. It had conversations with a spirit to have another outlet somewhere, and it warped his outlook on life and hence his thoughts, and it developed into the final outcome. That which happened reflected mainly on his father's karma rather than his. D. This was a surprise. I wouldn't think of it that way. S. Because the root of the problem started when his father refused to let him study creative things. D. But still, Hitler was the one who did those horrible things. S. It's hard to explain. She paused, trying to think how to word it. He started out with good intentions, wanting to be an artist or an architect or what have you. But he was not allowed to develop in that direction, and the energy there was warped. His main mistake was not being able to handle that energy in a constructive form, in another form besides creativeness. So he turned it to destructiveness. That is the main thing that he's had to work out. D. It seems as if he could have found an outlet for it in a more creative form, even though his father wouldn't allow him to do that. S. Yes, he could have become an engineer, for example. D. Isn't that kind of passing the buck, to blame his father? S. No. Hitler has to share his part of the blame, too. But it cannot be set solely upon him because the problem started with the narrow attitudes his father had developed. His father could have developed broader attitudes. D. But still it seems as if he didn't have to become so fanatical in his actions. You know what happened there? S. That was caused by the intensity of the creative energies. Had he been able to develop into an artist instead, he would have been a crazy artist and fanatical about that. But it would have been accepted as being bohemian. D. At least he wouldn't have harmed anyone. S. True, except maybe himself. D. But as it was, it snowballed to where he affected millions and millions of people. I would have thought he would have ended up in the hospital. Apostrophe S. He wasn't that damaged. Twisted. Yes. Damaged, no. Mainly what he needed was quiet and time to straighten things out. Those souls who are in the hospital have been so damaged by having gone through the same portion of karma over and over, so-called bad lives. D, S, D, S, D, S, D, S, and over, that they feel as if they're stuck in that karma. Whereas, in the case of Adolf Hitler, this was the first time this had happened to him. In his former lifetimes, he also had a strong creative impulse and he was in situations where he could let it develop. But in this lifetime it was blocked. The lesson he had to learn was how to handle that energy when he could not have things the way he wanted it, to handle it in any way that would fit in with the pattern that he had to live in. And he did not handle that aspect well. That was the main part of his karma that he is going to have to rework in a future lifetime, being able to handle undesirable situations. Well, didn't he create more karma for himself by what he did and all the people's lives he affected? He created more karma for himself, true. At this point it's difficult to say how much since this happened so recently. You mean it's not all analyzed yet? Yes. It will take several lifetimes, several incarnations to be able to see just how it affected the balance of things and how much more he has to work out. I was thinking of all the millions of people that were killed as a direct result of his life. That is true, he sent the orders for them to be killed, but he was partially influenced by people around him. And he did not derive the same amount of direct physical pleasure from it that the actual executioners did. What I am saying is that he gave the orders for these people to be lulled, and that does reflect on his karma, but the men who received these orders to build the gas chambers and use them, the guards and others, took direct physical pleasure in seeing these people die. Yes, he didn't really do the actual lulling, but he did nothing to stop it. He merely made it allowable for these people to be killed. That's why it reflects on his karma, that he allowed it to happen. He encouraged them to do it, but he kept his own hands clean, so to speak, by not doing it directly himself. It reflects badly on his karma that he created a political system that would allow this. Many of the men in the system were doing this because they wanted to. They were misfits in normal societies and they took direct physical pleasure in committing these atrocities. Conversations with a spirit D.S., but he also had the fanatical obsession with obliterating a race. He began the extermination of the Jews, a whole race of people, with his fanaticism and persecution. Yes. He was against any race that was not pure German, Aryan as he called it. He wanted his beloved Deutschland to be in the same sort of situation that the United States had been in 100 or 150 years earlier, with space to grow and become a major power, and have space for the people to multiply. He wanted to have a huge nation with many Germans and be able to use their culture to influence the whole world, the way the Americans had. And he wanted to obliterate any race of people that stood in the way of this goal. This was part of the twisting process of that creative impulse, because clearly it was impossible to do this without harming many people. Had he been able to become a creative genius, he could have contributed to that mighty culture of Deutschland that he loved so well. I was thinking that he had such a prejudice that that would have a karmic reaction too. That was just part of his soul being twisted. He was able to work out that prejudice through contemplation and meeting with the spiritual masters. He is definitely one example that is very difficult to understand. Yes, it is a very complex situation. What about somebody like a Jack the Ripper? Would that not affect him at all in his next life? Certainly it would. And please, we tread very carefully here, for we wish not to offend your sense of proprieties nor your moral standards. For we feel that your sense of morals is very delicate and we wish not to disturb these. However, we would please ask that you bear with us while we give you an insight which you might not have. Perhaps there were lessons learned from that experience of, as you say, Jack the Ripper, which were positive for this person. Of course, there was much harm done to the victims, and by your social standards the crimes were heinous. These acts were not acceptable social behavior. However, again it could be said that this individual learned through participation in those acts. Maybe a lesson of what indulgence is, of what it is to so-called bad lives i27 be self-involved and without regard for human life. This was perhaps an important lesson for that individual. We would also say that perhaps there were those lessons learned, difficult though they were, by those you would call the victims. And could we also perhaps inject another possibility here? That the participants in this episode, unseemly as it is, were voluntary from the inner planes. That they had contracted from their planning stages before their incarnations to participate in this event. And to so give to your society a yardstick by which the standards of your morals could be measured. An example of what is or is not acceptable social behavior. Do you see that in all actions, whether good or bad, there are lessons learned? Not only for those who are direct participants, but those who are bystanders or observers. So were it to be said that this was a horrible crime, then that could be accepted. Yet it could also be accepted, without denying the horror of such crimes, that many lessons were learned by all involved. And let me speak of the life force. That consciousness which was in the body was not killed. It was simply transferred to another plane of existence. The life force, which is even in every cell of your body, was transferred and was not lost. The simple physical makeup of the body changed from one of an organized state to one of a disorganized state. Technically speaking, death is nothing more than rearranging molecules on a physical level, and displacing consciousness from a vehicular enclosure to one of a free nature. Life has always been and life always is. There is no such thing as taking life, for life simply changes to another form. We speak here strictly from a technical point of view with all moral standards and emotional values removed. D. What about the victim? The person who is killed violently by another person, is this traumatic to them? S. To a great extent it also depends upon the preparation for souls. There have been a great many souls who came to this side through wars who were not traumatized at all. They knew that this death would occur to them and accepted self-same. Others were exceedingly traumatized, so much so that they had to go to the resting place. It is not always an equal situation. Two people can die side by side at the same instant with what you would look at as the same amount of conversations with a spirit trauma. And one may be traumatized by it and the other not. D. Does this have anything to do with the age of the souls and their previous experience? S. Not so much the age of the souls as their understanding of the Christ in all self. At times a young soul can comprehend this with greater understanding than one termed an old soul. D. You told me once that the way someone dies has meaning as well as the way they live. S. This is also true. In many cases certain types of death will erase great karma. Long, slow deaths are meant to bring learning to that individual. And if they learn through that they will amass great good karma. Suicide. D. What about suicides? S. Yes, those are very tragic cases, for this is truly one of the saddest truths which exist. There are simply no words to describe this situation in all its entirety. The suicide must come to the realization of the gravity of what he has done. For there is not simply the breaking of the contract. The individual's soul energy is thrown into complete disharmony. The suicides, depending on what shape they're in, sometimes go to the hospital and sometimes to the contemplation area. More times than not, one or two other entities are assigned to this person to explain why it is extremely wrong to take life. To take the life of self is the only thing that can truly be considered upon this side to be sin, because life is so precious. These people are confused and mixed up about what life is really all about and what they need to accomplish. They are not able to see the solutions they can work out with the karma they have on hand. And in between lifetimes they learn to broaden their outlook and to look at greater aspects of things, so they can work out problems without giving up on them. Suicides normally do not go back into the body quickly. Usually it is too traumatic. They can't solve the problem that caused them to commit suicide quickly enough to go back into the body that soon. They are talked to and helped. They have to learn why they did it and what brought them to that point. It usually takes so-called bad lives a long time before they are ready to face it. If it is extremely bad, they are taken to the resting place so they will forget the trauma of why they got to this stage in life, to the point where they would contemplate the taking of one's own life. Suicide brings upon that soul much bad karma that will have to be erased by much good in preceding and succeeding lives. D. If this is the worst thing anyone can do, do they punish themselves when they come back? S. Sometimes it's not in the life they directly go into. They don't always go into a life that would be working on the problems that they had in the one directly previous. Sometimes it takes several existences to come to the point where they feel they can face those problems. But all problems are even too early dealt with. You can't avoid it. The best way to handle it is to come back into a life that will have its fair share of problems like the last life did. And the suicide is paid back by working out these problems and hanging in there and being viable and living to a ripe old age and having a good well-rounded life. It may take several lives like this to pay back the suicide and to help balance the karma. You get on the right track by working out the problems that you gave up on before. A suicide must face the same situation and problem again until they learn an acceptable way of solving it. They can never run away from it. They only prolong their progress and create disruption. D. I know you have difficulty with our concept of time. But how much time is involved before a suicide finds release? S. This varies from individual case to case. Each soul does not learn at the same rate as the other. It depends upon that soul's confusion and feelings of worthlessness and loss, more than any other thing. Suicide is not forgiven lightly, but it can be worked out. It is not impossible to be worked out, like some would have you think. Nothing is impossible to work out, it's just that some things take longer than others because some things are more complicated. Yes, the killing of self is the ultimate wrong because that throws the karma out of balance. Killing yourself, murdering yourself, that's not working out any karma. That's creating more karma. D. Some people commit suicide to escape a problem. S. To commit suicide to escape a problem just amplifies that, conversations with a spirit problem that they will have to live through again. They are not escaping anything, they are just making it worse upon themselves. They are really not solving anything, they are simply creating more problems. Suicide is no solution. D. Would suicide ever have anything to do with other people's lives? S. Yes. Many times when a suicide happens, it is an opportunity for the other souls in the family to learn from the experience. For example, say a boy lulls himself, and from that experience the mother realizes that she was too overbearing and she learns to be more understanding. Then she has learned from it, although it has been a hard lesson. D. In some cases, wouldn't this be karma on the family or the friends that were left behind? S. Emphatically, never is suicide part of karma. Suicide is one aspect of free will. D. I see. Then it can never be viewed as being good for anything. S. That is correct. There are no winners. D. But does it ever happen to directly influence somebody else's karma? S. No. Because the person who suicides would be cutting their karma short and it would not be fair to them. D. I've heard that people more or less have a contract when they come into a life. And suicide would be reneging on that contract, not fulfilling their commitment. S. Before someone comes into a life, they meet with their spiritual masters and they figure out, in general, how much karma they can work out in this life if they make their decisions well. It's almost like a classroom assignment. The person says, well, this is what I will try to get accomplished in this lifetime. Now, if they don't get it all accomplished, it does not reflect badly on them. The fact that they are working on it and trying, this is what matters. And if midway through, just as they were barely getting started, they cut it short by killing themselves. Well, not only have they not accomplished anything they said they would try to, that they earnestly promised they would try to accomplish, but they have created more karma that they need to work on. So it's a negative experience all around. D. They still must work out their problems and their karma. It's so-called bad lives. 13. I would defeat the purpose to leave before they accomplish this. S. That is accurate. But if there is an X amount of work to be done in a lifetime, and should this X amount of work be done or accomplished before they have lived a full lifetime, then should they wish to pass over, there is no need for them to continue in the physical should they wish or desire not to. Then departure can be arranged through proper channels. It is the casting off of the body prematurely or before the job is done that can never be tolerated. Almost every culture in the world has beliefs in guardian angels or protector spirits. Do they really exist? S. There are guardian spirits. Usually it is someone that you have had a close bond with before and they are attending school or whatever on the spirit plane. They are helping you go through your learning period and helping protect you. These are serving their purpose on the spirit level. D. Are they assigned to a certain person? S. They can choose their own affinities. They are with you from the day you are born. D. Then you're not alone when you enter the physical body. S. No one is ever alone. The aloneness is a walling of oneself away from others. There are always others there to share the experience if you will just break down the walls and allow them to help you. D. If they are not incarnate, how do they help? This is somewhat difficult to explain because of a lack of understanding of the spirit level. But there is work to be done on a spirit level as well as on the physical level. There are those who, after an incarnation, must go to schools on the spirit level, and some of these will be teachers in schools. There are many other ways that they can help, including guiding those on the physical plane. Do they always have your best interest at heart? Most of the time the ones that surround you do, yes. You must learn to protect yourself from those who perhaps do not. Guides 13 3D, S, is your own personal guide powerful enough to keep the other influences away? Yes. As long as you also learn to surround yourself with what is good. This will keep away anything that is negative. There is no good or bad, there is only positive and negative. Any experience that is learned from is never negative. But it is sometimes difficult to know whether something is good for you or not. How would you know if other influences are trying to sway you the other direction? By opening yourself up to perceive what the final outcome of what they are recommending will be. Every one of you are able to see. And if you see that things will go wrong, then you know that this entity does not wish you well. But you know humans, they can be fooled. We are not perfect. Otherwise we would no longer enter the body. How can we know if it is our guide that is trying to influence us and not be fooled? If you think of yourselves in your daily lives, often you are in conflict with yourselves as to whether to do this or that. As an example, in dieting, when one may be giving in to the temptation of having a chocolate sundae, that part of you which craves the sundae is asking for gratification. And yet the higher part of you, which recognizes the need for diet, is saying, "No, we shall not." So you can see there is a division within yourself. Your guides feel as if they are a part of yourself and an extension. In this manner you know that this is your other soul that is speaking. If someone is just giving you advice and you feel hesitant about it, you must perhaps watch that source from which it comes. If it is from your guide, it will feel very right. He will never make you do anything, he would only suggest. If force is involved, it is definitely not a positive entity, because then your free will is overridden. You make conscious decisions and are not being told to do this or that, for this is a human endeavor as well. The guides do not run the show from the sidelines as some seem to think. They have their part to play and you have yours. It is a mutual, consensus agreement, a partnership between spiritual and physical. They do their work and you do yours. Conversations with a spirit D. There are many people who do think that those on your side run the show. Yes, and they must be led to understand that there is simply a shared responsibility in these matters. Many decisions are purely human and are based on human thought, human experience and human concept. Guides try to assist you with their wisdom and their experience. If you are torn between your decision and your guide's guidance, this is not wrong, this is simply a choosing process. They are merely there to offer help and assistance. It is not demanded that one strictly follow one's guides. They are merely assistants. You are the master of your destiny. Then our guides and spirit helpers try to influence us to do the right thing. This needs to be clarified. Influence is not an accurate word. The guides and helpers do not try to influence. Assist or enlighten would be more accurate. The difference may seem very subtle, but it is very important. Earth is the plane of choice. You have complete freedom to choose that which you may. If you need assistance in your choice, that is their purpose. They merely help and try to show or clarify. It is not as if you were puppets being manipulated from the other side. You have your destinies firmly in your own hands. They are bystanders who are able to assist at a moment's notice and are waiting for whenever you ask for their assistance. They do not prod you into some imaginary destiny, you create your own destiny. The same thing can be said for you while you live in the physical. You should help each other unselfishly. Some people feel that they must help people whether they like it or not. You should not feel like you must help, regardless of your emotional state at that time. You should give help when you want to, then you can give the best quality help. What we are saying to you is this: Please don't feel you must help everyone all the time. Feel only that you should help when you feel you want to help. Forced help is worse than no help at all. Is this where free will comes in? That is exactly what it is. Then you are saying that because we have free will, we are free to follow or disregard any advice we receive. And this guides 13.5 goes for the spiritual as well as the physical? S, that is correct, but please visualize something before we leave that statement. If you saw a child playing with a bottle of poison, you would naturally run and grab this bottle from the child, would you not? Suppose the child slapped you and pushed you back and continued trying to open the bottle. What would you do then? D. I would persist. S. Suppose the child prevailed as strongly as you? D. Then I would say he deserved what he got. S. And so say we. D. Then is it possible for a guide to keep us from injuring ourselves? S. Yes, it is. They will inform you of an imminent occurrence. This is merely assistance. I can give you an example of what you might think would be a guide taking over for you. While driving, if a car were coming down the street at you unbeknown to you and was on a collision path, your steering wheel might suddenly veer to the left and out of harm's way. Of course, this doesn't happen, but if your guides were allowed to do this, that would be what would occur. You do the steering, they merely inform you. D. Would they ever do anything like that in the case of an emergency? S. If it was necessary. It has been done before, but only under extreme situations. I'm not allowed to discuss this in detail as it would pre-influence you as to the workings at hand. But for the most part, you need to know that your destiny is what you make it. Again, I say, forced help is worse than no help at all. D. But it's nice to know that we have help if we need it. S. That is correct. We on this side are often amused by the impetuousness and impatience of humans. This is because of the difference in the spiritual and physical worlds. In the spiritual world, a thought is as good as done. Merely thinking the thought produces the desired effect. In the physical, things are not quite that easy, thus the human must learn patience. Since a thought on the spiritual plane makes things occur, 13.6 conversations with a spirit instantaneously, it is significant that on Earth we are given much more time between the thinking and the materialization of the thought, so that we have a chance to change our mind. If things occurred instantaneously here in our physical world, there could be many problems. Because of our human nature with its many flaws, selfishness, envy, jealousy, etc., we would probably create chaos. We are not as pure-minded in our intentions, and they have said before that the intent is the most important thing about what we wish to materialize. S. The relationship between guide and guided is fluid and mercurial and changes from incarnation to incarnation and even within a single incarnation, as needed. There is no rigid set rule. The means are dictated by the need. D. How are guides selected for people? S. They are selected by the need at that period in a person's life. Some may be a guide throughout the incarnation. Others may be temporary or may come and go as needed. Through the course of a lifetime, we may have several different guides. Their functions change as our lives change. D. Is there a difference between a guide, a counselor, and a spirit? I have heard these terms used at different times. S. The guides are spirits. A counselor is of a higher order than a guide. A counselor has much more knowledge and experience from which to draw. A tank of experience, if you will. A guide is much more intimate and close to an actual incarnation, such as one who possibly has recently left an incarnation and thus is still familiar with the intricacies of physical life. A counselor has usually been removed from an incarnation for some time and is drawn in for information. While the guides are more recently from an incarnation, the counselors have progressed above the incarnational need. Thus, each in their own right is quite capable of doing the job each is assigned. A guide may know more of the physical. A counselor may know more detail. This sounds rather like a school teacher going to a professor or the principal of the school for more advanced advice regarding a student. The teacher would naturally know the pupil on a more intimate basis because he is with him every day. The guide's I-37 professor or principal might not be familiar with the student at all. but can offer advice because they have much more knowledge and experience. The principal also has not related to the pupils in the classroom on such an intimate level for quite a while. They are more removed from the situation, but as such they can give a much more unbiased opinion.